those of you all who are more observant than others, or even if you made your way around to the back, you probably saw that big van out there on the side. Yeah. So my dad comes into town a few days ago, drives this big old van. I think I've shared with some of you how my dad, he bought it for himself, originally planning to use it for some of the stuff he does with real estate. And he decided, you know, this is just too much van. You know, he got it from a church out there in Cincinnati. And so he calls me up one day and says, you know what? I don't think I need all this van. How about I just give it to the church? How about you guys use it? And so he decided, well, you know, this would be perfect for us when the kids go out on, you know, different events and trips, or if we go over and we, you know, go places, take small groups, right? And I was really encouraged by this. So it was very generous of him to do that. And so what happens is, anyway, he comes into town, he brings the van, got it checked up, it's running great. But he does this thing to me, which he's never actually done this before. But he says, how are you feeling, son? And I'm thinking, what a loaded question, right? Like, what does that mean? And then he says, no, I mean your health. How are you doing? I said, no, I'm fine. You know, I said, I'm a little tired. The dog's keeping me up, you know, stuff like that, but I'm okay. And he says something very important to me that, again, he never said this before. He says, you know, at your age, you know, at your age, you need to be thinking about that. He said, there's one of the biggest problems, especially for men, when they get into their 40s, 50s, he said, they don't like to go to the doctor. A lot of men stay in denial about their health. And so something that could have been prevented, even or even like it could have been avoided altogether, he said, they don't find it until it's a problem. You know, they don't find it until later. And then he shared with me a lot of different things that he has gone through. See, my dad, he's kind of a close-to-the-vest guy. He doesn't talk a whole lot. So he was just sharing with me different times when he had gone to the doctor when he was younger. And I'm thinking, I didn't even know he was sick, right? But he's telling me all this, and he's telling me different things that are kind of hereditary, things that he had, things that his mother had. You know how you, anytime you go in, especially if you go to a new doctor, I'm actually in the process of finding a new doctor. I haven't actually set up the appointment yet, but I will this week. And they'll ask you all these questions like, do you have a history of stroke? You know, mom's side of family, dad's side of family, they got all the check marks and everything they want you to do. And I was really, again, I was kind of taken aback because he had never started it with, you know, at your age. But the fact that he was concerned about my health, that he was interested, and he wanted me to make sure that I'm taking care of my health. And I bring that up because as we've been talking about spiritual health, sometimes we have to be able to take a self-analysis, to ask ourselves, when is the last time we've had a checkup? When is the last time we've gone to the doctor? Maybe we've been avoiding finding out that we have that underlying condition, that we know it. We've already come to the conclusion that this is happening. I think I've shared with you all about how the last time I did have a doctor's appointment about a year ago, he told me, he says, now you know with the history of diabetes, excuse me, with the history of diabetes in your family and with the things that I'm looking at here, you're in perfect health except for your blood sugar. It's slowly reaching up there. And he said, you're masking it and you're eating well and you're exercising and things like that. He said, but it's coming. Eventually, you're going to have to accept the fact that the diabetes that runs in your family is coming for you too. And that was kind of a moment of truth for me to really just step back and it was the first time I actually thought about, honestly, my own mortality. Now, I took the kids skating for this birthday party, and I fell a couple times, and that was, you know, fast forward. Now you really know your mortality, because I remember going skating, and I could fall 100 times and just get up. I fell exactly 3 times over here, down the street here at the Dover Skating Center, fell exactly 3 times. It felt like I played a full football game. It felt like I carried the ball 30 times. That's how painful it was. You know, it was that painful. But I want us to take a few minutes here and think about our own spiritual health from the standpoint of, are we at least willing to go to the doctor and hear what the doctor tells us and do what he says to do? The title of the sermon today is He Who Can Does, He Who Cannot Teaches. Some of you guys know who this is referring to. There's this guy, his name is George Bernard Shaw, right? Now this guy, he was considered a great playwright. I believe he died in like 1950. But George Bernard Shaw had a lot of these different quotes and these different lines that were in his plays. This one, he says, people who say it cannot be done should not interrupt those who are doing it. You know, he's saying, look, you can have all the doubts and complaints and fears that you want. Get out of the way of those. Don't impede their progress, right? Those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything. If you are so stuck in what you think, how can you ever be moved? How can you ever grow? Another one is, a life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more useful than a life spent doing nothing. You know, it's very low risk to do nothing, but it is not rewarding, it's not fulfilling, and it's not impactful to do nothing, even if it means you're going to make mistakes along the way. Another one, he who can does, he who cannot teaches. And I bring this up, the teaching thing, because I want to look at Jesus, the ultimate teacher, but also those who were considered teachers back then. I want to take a few minutes to look at the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all those scribes and those people who were considered the teachers of their day and how Jesus viewed them and what he was trying to tell them as teachers. Looking at Matthew 28, starting in 16, it says, then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Another one in Matthew chapter 4, verse 18, starting there, it says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Just in these two passages here, there are many more, but just in these two passages here, we see something very familiar to us who have committed our life to Christ and have lived in such a way as to try to be pleasing to him. We see this thing where he is calling out these disciples. He's giving them a very clear expectation, a very clear change of purpose. He's saying, you're going to be fishers of men. You're going to go out and fish for people now. Your purpose is no longer going to be your job and your career, but that job and that career has to be surrounded by the ultimate purpose, which is helping others to find a relationship with their Creator. We see that this is not just looking at Matthew 28, that this is not something that is kind of a passing thing, but this is something that is very clearly an expectation. It is noted, and many people could refer to Matthew 28, verse 16 through 20. They refer to it as the Great Commission, a commission many of you all military, you know when you're a commissioned officer, what do? When the higher-ups say, hey, it's time for you to go to Korea, it's time for you to go to Philippines, it's time for you to go to Germany, you go home and you tell your wife or your husband, hey, guess what? I got to go. And see, this is the thing about teaching others to obey and follow Jesus, is that so much of what Jesus was telling people to do and giving the expectation for them to do in today's society, in our Christendom, our Christian culture, all over this country and all over the world, certainly, is treated as though it's an option. It's treated as though it is something that, I've even heard people tell me that the idea that I have to go out and spread the gospel, it's not for everybody. That was just for Jesus' 12 or the 72 or the ones who he actually laid his hands on. Like, we come up with all these rationalizations as to why it is that we shouldn't have to go out and do these things. But what's more clear, and I brought up George Bernard Shaw because his whole those who can do and those who cannot teach, he had a very cynical attitude toward teachers. And it wasn't just like the teachers like, you know, Curtis teaches or Donna, she's a retired teacher. He wasn't talking about that type of teaching. It goes back to the idea of what we see when we think of discipleship. When we think of discipleship, we think of more like an apprenticeship. It's more like these guys, tradesmen, right? If you're, you know, you have those terms where they'll say that someone is a master plumber or a master, I don't know, electrician or, I don't know, boilermaker, blacksmith. You had someone who had mastered the craft, who had mastered the understanding of their particular trade. That's why the disciples would often call Jesus their master. And so they were following underneath him. They were learning from him. Kind of like we talked about a couple weeks ago about coaching and training and how you learn underneath others. You follow their example and do what they do. You eat what they eat. You sleep when they sleep. You imitate their life so that you, at some point, can become a master as well. This is discipleship. And this is the context in which George Bernard Shaw was saying those who can do and those who cannot teach. The cynicism there was because there's a lot of people who they have all the information and they can teach you and tell you how to do it. They can correct you when they're wrong. They can point the finger at you. But when it comes time to actually doing it, when it comes time to actually living it, that is where they fall short. Sometimes it's for lack of desire or commitment or willingness. Sometimes it's out of fear. It could be for any number of reasons, but I want to look at these teachers that Jesus often talked about as we continue on and really ask ourselves some hard questions about, are we just the teachers that George Bernard Shaw was saying teach? Or are we willing to also be the doers, those who are willing to go out and face where we are as spiritual beings? John chapter 8, starting verse 31, it says, to the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teachings, again, going back to the teaching thing, if you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we should be set free? Jesus replied, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are Abraham's descendants. Yet you are looking for a way to kill me because you have no room for my word. I am telling you what I have seen in the Father's presence, and you are doing what you have heard from your father. Abraham is our father, they answered. If you were Abraham's children, Jesus said, then you would do what Abraham did. As it is, you are looking for a way to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, that I heard from God. Abraham did no such things. You are doing the works of your own father. He goes on later and he makes the clear implication that you're doing the things of your real father, that being Satan. You're doing things that are evil. See, he's not just talking to random people. See, it's easy when we see how Jesus was talking to, you know, a tax collector or some criminal or some prostitute. It's easy then. He's talking to the teachers of his day, those who were held themselves up in a high regard. They knew the law. They understood what it meant to adhere to the law. He's talking to them. He's saying, in the very beginning there, if you hold to my teachings, then you're really my disciples. See, it's very easy for us to think, well, I'm adhering to the rules, but if you go out and do, not just talk about it, not just, you know, teach about it, not just tell people, but if you actually go out and live and do those things, then you're really my disciples. We're defined by how we live and who we serve, not by what we call ourselves. You know, anybody can say, hey, I am to use an example, I am a teacher, I'm an educator. But to say that and then to do that are two totally different things. Because we know, all you have to do is listen to anybody who's an educator or a teacher who works with children, for example. They'll tell you, there's a whole lot more that goes into teaching than just preparing a lesson plan. You have to manage personalities. You have to manage hardships. You have to learn enough about each of those students to know how and what makes them tick. You have to be invested in getting to know those people. You can't just say, well, hey, I'm a mechanic. You have to understand how machines work. The reason why Jesus had his disciples come follow him for so long is so that they would pick this up, this apprenticeship, this discipleship, this learning. So much of what we do can't just be our knowledge. It has to be also our interaction and how we behave. Moving on, there's a reason, going back to the health thing, there's a reason why some people don't like to go to the doctor. Those of you who can read this far, it says, please wait, your doctor will see you in 3 hours. And this would be funny if it hadn't happened so many times. I've been there where it's like, are you serious? I had a 2 o'clock appointment. Now I have to reschedule because I have to go pick up my kids. This actually happened, right? Sitting there for hours. You know, other people don't want to go because they don't want to be told, you know what? You got to lose that weight. You got to stop eating so much. You got to stop eating that particular thing. You know? There's all kinds of reasons why we don't want to go to the doctor. Notice I'm showing all men in these pictures because, again, like my dad said, so often men have this thing where it's like, hey, I feel good. I feel fine. I guess I can count to 10. I can see. You know, I was almost amused at how people kind of were trivializing the fact that, what was it, last week when, you know, everybody was standing like it was a national emergency and waiting to hear back from Donald Trump's doctor about his health. And then they talked about, well, did you give him a mental exam, right? And then when they went through the whole thing about the mental exam, he says, well, you know, basically we just made sure that he was cognitively all there. And as simple as that may sound, a lot of times we're afraid. We're afraid to go to the doctor. We're afraid to hear the truth about who we are and where we stand, even if it's just spiritual health. We're afraid, or we resist it, or we don't really want to know. We'd rather go on with the illusion, like the Pharisees. We saw, we're Abraham's descendants. We know we're right, but what are you doing? What does the chart say when the doctor comes back and says, hey, I've taken all your blood work and taken all the tests, and this is what it says, regardless of what you say. What are we willing to do about our spiritual condition? On it here, it says in John 3, I'll start in verse 1. Now there was a Pharisee, a man named Nicodemus, who was a member of the Jewish ruling council. Now keep in mind, Jewish ruling council means that he was a Pharisee. He was one of those teachers. He came to Jesus at night and said, "Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher who has come from God, for no one could perform the signs you are doing if God were not with him." Jesus replied, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God unless they are born again." "How can someone be born when they are old?" Nicodemus asked. "Surely they cannot enter a second time into their mother's womb to be born." Jesus answered, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God unless they are born of water and the Spirit. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but the Spirit gives birth to spirit. You should not be surprised at my saying you must be born again. The wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit." "How can this be?" Nicodemus asked. "You are Israel's teacher," Jesus said, "and you do not understand these things? Very truly, I tell you, we speak of what we know and we testify to what we have seen, but still you people do not accept our testimony. I have spoken to you of earthly things and you do not believe. However, how then will you believe if I speak of heavenly things? No one has ever gone into heaven except the one who came from heaven, the Son of Man. Just as Moses lifted up the snake in the wilderness, so the Son of Man must be lifted up, that everyone who believes may have eternal life in him. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life." You don't even have to be a Christian to know that last verse. All you got to do is watch football or baseball. You see it in the stands. But so much about that passage we miss because all we hear is verse 16 about how he gave his son. And yet, Jesus spends so much of that time telling him, you must be born again. You must have a renewed spirit and a renewed life, a renewed attitude, a rebirth. It can't just be what was in the past. He says, you are a teacher of the law. You're somebody who should understand when I say you must be born again. Are we capable of being born again in our thinking? Are we willing to go see the doctor and listen? Or are we going to hold on to what the last checkup said? Are we going to hold on to, well, this is how I adhere to the law? And what we see here about spiritual health is just like when we go to the doctor, we can go 6 months later and something changes. You know, you may be feeling perfectly fine right now, and then all of a sudden, you feel a lump on your neck. You know, you feel a lump in your arm, or you notice that you're getting tired more often, you're sweating more often, or you're not seeing quite as well. You're forgetting things. See, things change. Things may very well be different. But are we capable of having new thinking? Are we stuck where we are, where we have been in the past? I raise this up because when we think about what it means to be spiritually healthy, you know, we talked about the trainers and we talked about having coaches and we talked about being willing to allow others to pour into our lives. But are we willing to do that? Or are we just okay with being teachers and having the knowledge? Are we willing to say, you know what? I'm going to ask myself a very hard question about my spiritual health. I'm going to ask myself, see, I'm 42. I have no, other than the sugar thing, I don't have any underlying health conditions. But that could change next year. That could change in 5 years. That could change in a month. Then what am I willing to do? Or am I going to stay in denial about where I am? As a church, are we where we need to be? Are we actually doing what we see in the Great Commission? Are we actually spreading the gospel? Are we actually teaching and then also demonstrating. See, the funny thing about demonstrating something for someone, they have to be paying attention. That means you have to be in their life. You have to actually, like, see them and talk to them or be in their presence in some way. Whose presence are we in where they can see Jesus in us? Who are we demonstrating Christ for? Here's a question. When is the last time you have made a disciple? When is the last time that you have said, you know what? God, the Spirit, it's prompting me, it's moving me, and I'm making a difference in someone's life so that they can hear the gospel, so that they can see it. Are we honest about this? Or are we just going to hold on to the fact that, well, but, you know, back in 1989, I gave my life to Christ, and I got baptized, and I said, I'm going to live for him, and I accepted him as my Lord and Savior. Kind of like back in 1989, I was 13. I could fall on the skating rink 100 times. It's a little different now. And in many cases, we have to be honest and take a sober self-assessment and say, am I still that 13-year-old or that 30-year-old? What's different about my spiritual health? What's different about my checkup now? What do I need to do now? Or am I just going to ignore and put off my spiritual health and avoid going to see the doctor altogether? So I want to close it here. A few questions. Some of these are harder than others. Does my relationship with God include me bringing others to him? Have I ever been taught what it means and how to do it? Have I ever been taught how to actually go and do what we see in the Great Commission? Has someone ever showed you, explained to you, showed you the scriptures, pointed out how it is that we're like Christ and how we can go and teach others what it means to be a disciple? Have you ever been taught this? If you haven't, see, we see this with Nicodemus. Now, he came at night. You know, he didn't want everybody to see him going to Jesus. But it takes a lot of humility to say, I don't know. We're going to talk about this in a couple of weeks, actually in 3 weeks, but where we see how in Acts and in the first century church, some of the different scriptures we read about how there were people who they said, we've never even heard of this baptism you speak of. But that's okay. They were taught by those and explained to them. But are we even willing to admit when we don't know something? Are we willing to learn this discipleship thing beyond what we already know? Or are we holding on like the Pharisees? When is the last time I've had a spiritual checkup? How long has it been since I've made a disciple? Have I ever made one? So often we qualify things and we want to, you know, see how we measure up to others and see if we're adhering to all the rules, but like we see here, that is why Jesus said, no, this is a matter of being born again. This is a matter of the Spirit. This isn't a matter of, well, I've adhered to this law and I haven't to this one, so I'm going to pick this one up and I'm going to. No. Jesus is saying, this is a living thing. This is not just what you know and just what you tell others, but it's what you do. It's how you not just process the information, but how you apply it. Who, because, you know, we're very quick to want to run to our corners and retreat to our defenses. But the hard question has to be asked. When is the last time someone has said, I want to be a disciple. I want to follow Christ. I want to commit the rest of my life to him. And we fired up the water. We warmed it up, or we took them to the beach and we baptized them. When's the last time someone, doesn't have to be as an entire church, when's the last time you have made a disciple? How do I know that I'm not a Pharisee? And this is a really hard one because a lot of times it's kind of like, you know, there's levels to this where it's like, okay, who do I not want to be compared to in the Bible? I remember when I was little, they said, this is when I was like probably my kids' age, and we were in Sunday school, and they were talking about the different people in the Bible. We read all these stories about Daniel and David and Joshua and all these people, and who do you want to be compared to? Pharisees were not on the list. Nobody wanted to be compared to a Pharisee, because we understand how hypocritical it is for the Pharisees to say so much and teach so much and tell everybody else, and even to the point of looking down at other people for not being like them. But whose lives were they changing? Whose lives were they having an impact on? See, that's the makings of a Pharisee. Do my relationships consist of mostly other Christians and churchgoers, or do I have people that I'm engaged in discipleship with? Those who may be struggling, those who may be lost, those who may not necessarily understand what the gospel is. See, that's a clue as to whether or not you're leaning Pharisee or you're leaning disciple of Jesus. Who are you spending all of your time with? Who are you praying for? Who are you serving? Who are you giving to? Final question. What am I personally willing to sacrifice to follow Jesus and learn how to make disciples? Have I identified a teacher? This is also very important, because like we talked about a couple weeks ago, there are many of us who we could be teachers. Not the kind George Bernard Shaw was talking about. We could actually be the teachers. You know, they talk about the different styles of learning, how you have the ones who they lecture, and then you have others who they demonstrate, and there's all these different ways. You know, every teacher is not the same. I'm sure if I, you know, I've been in my wife's classroom from time to time. Not only is her teaching style different than some other teachers I've seen, but because of the population that she has, because of what she does, her teaching is different. You know, I'm sure if I went to school with Curtis tomorrow, I would see a teaching style that might be different than Donna, might be different than how Sharon used to teach when she used to teach. But are we being taught what it means to be a disciple? And I'm going to do something I normally don't do, but I want to issue a challenge. Next month, in February, we're going to be doing something called Discipleship Boot Camp. I know, boot camp sounds kind of scary. Some of you said I've given up on the boot camp thing. But this is all a matter of the Spirit. This is all a matter of us being prepared. And not only am I expecting those to participate, but I'm expecting some of you to teach, to be able to assist in facilitating this. See, what we're not going to do as a church, what we can't do as a church, is be satisfied with just talking a good game. We have to know how to apply this. Now, there's going to be certain parts of this boot camp, it's going to be for those who maybe you don't know very much. Maybe you don't necessarily know what it means to preach the gospel. Maybe you don't know what it means to share your life. Maybe you want to make disciples. You want to go out and impact other people's lives, but you don't necessarily know how. Maybe you yourself don't necessarily know what it means to be a disciple. This boot camp is going to be for you. And then there's going to be a totally separate one, because there are many of us, we know the truth. We know the gospel. We know what it means to pour into others' lives, but maybe we don't know how. Maybe things are different. Maybe things have changed. How do we then go out and teach others what it is that we know? You know, we talked about this in the past, how, you know, I remember when I was a little kid, there was a time when my dad and I, we would go out and do what they call door knocking. Not a whole lot of door knocking anymore. It's a little dangerous out there. You know, you can occasionally do it. But the fact is, things are different than it was in the 70s and the 80s. But it doesn't stop us from having the call to go and be disciples and make other disciples. So when we start our boot camp, it's one thing to think about it. It's one thing to talk about it. How many of us are going to participate? How many of us want to know? That you may have a scheduling conflict. You may say, well, I can't come on this particular day because I got to work, whatever it is. The materials are still going to be available to you. You know, we're going to do an alternate class on Sunday because we're going to be doing it on Wednesday. We're going to be doing it during Sunday school, but we're also going to be doing it on the weekend, on Saturday. Kind of like how when you go to college, sometimes you couldn't get that course that you wanted to get, but you had to graduate, so you had to take the weekend one. Yeah. But how many of us truly have the desire to be more than just a teacher? We don't want to just say, I want to just tell people and talk about it in a certain way, but I actually want to do it. I want to know how to teach others to follow and obey him. How many of us are willing to ask an even harder question and admit, you know what? I myself have never been made into a disciple. I myself have never truly come to follow him and committed my life to this. No one's ever shown me. If that's you, it's not a pride thing. You know, it's not a matter of ego. We see that with Nicodemus. Ask for the prayers of the church. Come forward and say, help me. Pull me aside afterwards. Say, I want to know how to better be like Jesus. I want to know what it means to have that life because I want that level of peace in my life. I want to help my family and my friends have a relationship with God. If this sounds like you, if you want to come forward and ask for the prayers of the church right now, we ask that you come forward as we stand and sing our song of invitation.